Brian Simpson from my favorite college band, Three Mere Widows, DaleWileyShow.com. Now we're live. I'm here from the center of nowhere near Springfield, Missouri, and telling you from the Dale Wiley Show, which my daughter painted this. I love the little painting.
I love it.
That's
and
awesome.
I'm talking to Brian Simpson, one of the members, one of the founding members of Three Mere Widows. And so, first of all, how are you, Brian? How are you in 2020?
Well, Dale, first, thanks for having me.
Yes.
It's a real pleasure being here.
Well, definitely.
I think I've got an echo.
Okay. Well, what do we do about that? I don't know how to change that. So.
Okay. As long as it's not coming through on your end.
No, it's fine on my end. It sounds wonderful in here.
Okay. Well, 2020's been hard. 2020's been hard for everybody, but I think we're doing just fine, I think. And how have you been?
Well, I'm doing wonderfully. And as I like to say, I have the best pandemic ever. And so just remember, you know, when you feel something going bad, just remember that you have that attitude and you have the reason to turn it around and make it wonderful. And so I love connecting with all the people, and especially members of my favorite bands, including Three Mere Widows. And so I definitely want to talk about, first of all, how did you get into liking music? How did you first get interested in music?
Oh, well, I think I've been interested in music my whole life. I started playing instruments when I was pretty young. I had an older brother and sister who were really into music, and I used to steal their albums all the time and to bring them downstairs and play them on.
Where was it? This is St. Louis.
This is in St. Louis. That's right. Okay. That's right. And they're 10 and 15 years older than me. So they had, you know, tastes from the, you know, 60s and 70s that, you know, really influenced my taste in music. And so that's probably where I really got into this. And then I was, you know, I played piano for a number of years and then I moved over to guitar. And I just have always been interested in music. And I studied music in college for a while. And,
right. Where'd you go to college?
I went to Washington University.
Yeah, okay, I thought that was right. Yep. Because your mom worked there, is that right?
That's correct. Yes,
okay.
She did.
Tell me about her.
Yeah. Well, she's still around, actually.
Cool.
But she's 94 years old, and she's in a home right now. But she worked in the chemical engineering department. She was an administrative person there.
Right.
But born in St. Louis, raised there. I lived in the same house growing up my whole life. So,
wow, that's cool. And so what was WashU like?
It was challenging, you know. I went through a number of different majors, as many people do. And it opened my eyes to a lot of music that wasn't so prevalent in the St. Louis scene at the time. You know, St. Louis was all about classic rock, but there were so many people at WashU from the East Coast.
Yes.
So I got turned on to a lot of new music from them.
Oh, such as? Give me examples.
Oh, gosh. I mean, there are bands that came through there. I saw REM in 84 in Graham Chapel.
Wow.
And the Violent Femmes in 85, maybe, all at Graham. You know, these are bands that were not getting radio play in St. Louis at all, except for maybe on KWER, right?
Yes.
The WashU station. right. Yeah, all 10 watts of it, exactly.
Yes. And so, but that was, how did that influence the forming of Three Mere Widows?
Well, I guess I just was sort of taken by that music and started writing with those things in mind. And I spent a lot of time working on writing early on, actually. And then the early Three Mere Widows stuff was pretty influenced by bands like, you know, REM and The Cure, right, and whatever other bands were around, yeah, at the time. You know, that obviously morphed into other things, but.
Right. Because by the time I got to WashU, you guys were back from Boston and you were starting to, you knew there was an album coming out and you were making really good music, but it was definitely a different influence. And so
that's
how
right
to go from the first stage to the second stage?
Again, I think listening to certain bands, you get exposed to more and more. We got more and more exposed. Well, so I mean, there's a '60s element to a lot of the music that we did back
Right.
then, right?
Yes.
So there was some Traffic influences
Right.
and Cream and things like that. So that's sort of in there, but there was more of Fairport Convention kind of
Right.
influence, I think, at that time. And as soon as we sort of hit on that, I think that's kind of what where we went for a while with things.
Right.
It felt right to us.
Because again, when I first saw you, I was with my friend Liz Allen, and what I so remember what as we sat there in the gargoyle and listened to that amazing drumming of Matt Albert, and that was the key. We said this is a good band and they're going to be big because their drumming was so good.
Matt was
We
an
lost him here.
unbelievable drummer.
Right.
It's been hard this year.
Yeah.
I remain close with Matt. We talked pretty regularly and talked just a couple of weeks before he passed.
Really.
He was just a sweet sweetheart of a guy, just a wonderful person, and in terms of musicianship, second to none. I don't think I've never known a more musical drummer in my life. He's
Right.
really phenomenal.
Well, talk about the rest of the band. What was that band like?
Ah, well, they're family, right?
Right.
The band is they're my family. They always will be. So Matt and I were together. We were the first two people. I saw an ad for him in a store, so we contacted him. And Charles was at WashU also,
Right.
and we had a mutual friend. Actually, Charles, I was working down at a place doing some research at a place called Central Institute for the Deaf, and Charles came down there as a subject. So he was, and so we met, and that we hit it off. But then he went away to graduate school. Sean and I met because I think he had an ad up too. We met in a McDonald's parking lot. We had s similar
Sounds
taste in music.
like
And Sean Sean knew Alice from Webster.
Yes.
But as people, I mean, I think we just hit it off immediately as people. As musicians, well, just if you're close as people, then that comes out in your music, I think, as well. Sounds very cliche, I know, but there was a chemistry there. There was something that was magical that we felt anyway.
Yes.
And it came out in our music, and we were uninhibited when we were playing with one another. We could explore things, and I've never experienced anything like it since. So.
Well, I guess the fact of having the bedrock of Matt and then Alice's voice was just such a big combination. And so talk about Alice for a minute.
Well, she is she's an incredible person on multiple levels, right?
Right. Right.
She's just, I mean, she is, she just commands the room when she's there, whether she's up on stage or she's just hanging out with you. She's an amazing, just a light. And in terms of her talent, well, I mean, I think that she's got the kind of voice that everybody listens to, and everybody can just say, "Oh my God, I'm in love with that voice,"
Yeah.
right?
Love it.
And I remember when we recorded our album, we recorded, but Peter Henderson was our producer, and Peter had been the engineer and had done producing for Paul McCartney.
Right.
And I remember he made a comment one time. He said, "There's only one other person I've known besides Alice who can nail the vocals first time just like that, and it's Paul McCartney." So she's in good company. But
Right.
she's an amazing force. She really is. So
Yes, really. And so talk about that album that you made.
where to start? We got I could talk about the business side. What would you like to hear about?
Whatever you want to, Film ball.
Well, all right. But we got, we had moved up to Boston, right. We got signed while we were up there.
Right.
I think we moved in October, November timeframe, and that was quite an ordeal. And then we got signed in April, but we had actually gotten signed based on a show that we had played back at the Blue Note in Columbia with the Connells. So we didn't really even have to move, it turns out, to get signed, but we thought that was the way to go. Right. And we thought that, we would be closer to all of the colleges up there if we went. Anyway, we got signed in April. And then we went into this, we went through a series of listening to a bunch of different producers, show reels to determine what we wanted and talking to them. Some, really pretty amazing people. And we just landed on Peter, and we feel very lucky. Peter's, to this day, a good friend and somebody who we continue to work with on stuff. But we went down to Memphis to record.
Right.
At Ardent. Well, we didn't start at Ardent. We went to a couple of studios. I remember Peter going in and, clapping his hands to see what the acoustics were like. He's like, oh, no, this won't do. And then we'd go to the next place. But luckily, we ended up at Ardent, which is an incredible place. Yes. With a ton of history, and amazing bands have recorded there. Absolutely. And it was, really a magical experience. I mean, we've just had the best time. It was a lot of work, but it didn't feel that way. We felt so lucky the whole time. The record company, they put up, there were issues for sure.
Well, it's one of those things where you think a 7-album deal is the most amazing thing ever until it happens and doesn't go amazing from the very beginning.
That's right. TVT was, a label that was an indie, but they had the power and the finances of a major, close to it, not quite, but more so than other indies. So they had a lot of clout, but nominally they were still supposed to be the kind of label that nurtured a band that allowed them to grow as time went on. Mm-hmm. We signed the album deal. It had, an album plus 6 options.
Right.
That they could decide to take or not. We didn't have that choice.
Right.
But they wanted a hit. They wanted a, they told us that they were going to sort of nurture us, but what they really wanted was what the majors wanted, which was a big hit. And we were not that kind of band.
Right. I really think that in the stuff that you guys did later on, you showed how much growth you still had and what you had to go that never got out. At that time, anyway.
Yep. No, we tried. We did send them a lot of music, but they weren't. they didn't hear the top 40 hit, I guess, and so they weren't ready to put us in. And so,
more with Brian after a minute. DaleWileyShow.com.
Do you love music? Do you know about the musical map of Missouri?
Dallas Wayne,
Chuck Berry,
Dave Alvin, Robbie Foulkes,
The Skeletons,
The Ozark Mountain Daredevils,
Uncle Tupelo,
Wayne Carson,
Nelly,
Lou Whitney,
Symptoms Morel,
Kansas City, Jeff City,
St. Louis,
St. Joe,
Columbia,
Buckle of the Bible Belt, the
Studio on South Avenue in Springfield,
Missouri.
Add the Missouri Music Podcast to your list of favorites. Lawyer, author, and Slewfoot Records label owner Dale Wiley takes you on a musical trip around Missouri while raising funds for Musical Map of Missouri, a nonprofit organization which will help ensure Missouri musicians affected by COVID-19. Visit MissouriMusicPodcast.com for more information. Tune in to the Missouri Music Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Find us on YouTube now, DaleWileyShow.com. I guess that there is a point when you would have had to just change your name and or totally blow up the band or do something that you weren't prepared to do.
What we had to do was we had to be broken up for a period of time.
Right.
In order to officially be out of the contract. Right. And then we could get like a couple of years.
Right. But
by that time, people had moved on to do different things, right? So, we thought maybe there was a possibility we could break up. That was the only way to get out of the contract, and we could still get back together. But it was not going to happen. So,
Well, talk about the second album that you recorded several years ago.
Yeah, so that was kind of a happy coincidence that a few of us ended up in St. Louis at the same time. We decided, let's get a rehearsal space and get together and jam a little bit. And it just felt great. So we said, let's, you know, dig up all these old songs and do a show. And once we did that, we said, let's get these songs on, you know, released somehow. We really want to get them archived. And so we were able to do that at Sawhorse with Jason McIntyre, who's phenomenal. And it's an amazing place. And we had a great time doing it. It took a while, right? We had some, you know, hiccups along the way, some things that, you know, kept us, you know, we played our reunion show in 2015.
Right.
And we were going to play some more shows than, we had actually had some shows booked. I had some health issues, and so we had to cancel those. And then it was a while before we got things going again. And then we got going on the album, and we just started doing demos at home and handing, you know, passing them around to one another. You know, we rewrote some of the songs, we rearranged some things, and it worked out great. And we're just, you know, very pleased that we're able to get something recorded. Even, you know, it doesn't need to, I mean, I'm glad that people get to hear it, but it really, we were doing it so that we could have something archived.
And yeah. So talk about the difference between being a band in the 90s and being a band now.
Well, the whole industry has changed.
Yes.
In fact, have you seen the movie Recording in Progress that was made in?
No.
By, I forgot his name, Justin Fisher, maybe, in St. Louis, actually. And they interview a lot of music industry people from St. Louis and then all around the world. Steve Albini, Steve Lillywhite. But they talk about how the industry has changed, and it has changed so much. People are not going, you know, in terms of recording, people aren't going into the studios in the same way they were. People are not able to make a reasonable living unless they're performing live. So instead of, you know, you don't go on tour to support an album. You get out an album so you can get your touring going. So it's very different. And in terms of us, we're all separated, right? I'm in Ohio.
Right.
Sean's in St. Louis. Alice is in Texas, and Charles is up in New Hampshire.
Right.
And then Danny, who played with us at the reunion shows and on the album, is in St. Louis, and he's phenomenal. So it's a very different kind of situation now, but we're still writing. Sean and Charles and I are still working together on some things. We're putting together some songs right now. So, but the whole industry has changed, and I'm not sure it's changed for the better.
All different, but in some ways you say it's better, and in some ways it's worse. I mean, it's just different, definitely.
Right.
But also, your son played on those shows, right?
He did. He played in our first reunion show. Yeah, he was 14 years old, 14, and he tore it up. Yeah, he was great, and he's still a phenomenal guitar player. He's much better than I'll ever be.
What's he doing now?
He's in college. He's in his junior year. He's actually studying business, but he's also playing music and still. And
where's he going?
He's at Miami University in Oxford, Ohio.
Oh, wow. So still close to home in your new home.
Yeah, it's about an hour or so away. It's a beautiful little area. Yeah, I think he likes it, but I think he wants to be playing more music. So, but well, nobody's playing right now, right?
Play with his dad and his wonderful band and just make a career out of that. That's what I see.
That's right. That's right.
So what are you doing now? What's going on now with you?
In my personal life, you mean? What do I do? Yeah, so we ended up here because I came back to Ohio for graduate school and ended up getting a job here. So I'm a researcher. I do perception research and psychoacoustics at the Air Force Research Laboratory here.
Wow. I don't know what that means, but it sounds cool.
I try to study how people hear things, and you know, how you could hear things when there's a lot of sounds going on, how you could focus in on certain things and stuff like that. That's it's, and I teach over at the university here. That's, you know, takes up a lot of my time clearly, but I, you know, my favorite thing is still to be in the studio and play or playing live. So,
well, now we're talking, let's talk for a minute about the project that we're doing that called the Musical Map of Missouri, and it's to help musicians during the pandemic. And so who are a few people that you really send out or were really big in St. Louis for you?
Who are the musicians that were big for me in St. Louis? Wow, that's an interesting question. I mean, there are people who we sort of grew up through the music scene with, like Uncle Tupelo, right? There were, you know, other forces on the music scene, like Dave Simon and Filet of Funk,
right?
If you remember that, I mean, and he was amazing and really started a big scene, I think, in St. Louis at the time. I didn't know a lot. Well, of course, there's the folks in Springfield, Lou Whitney and company in Springfield, that, you know, right? The skeletons, right?
And the movie, you need to see the movie if you haven't.
I've not seen the movie, no.
It's really wonderful. It's on Prime, Center of Doom by Dave Oakshore. It's so good. And it has, so that's an extra bonus. But that's not the main point, because it's so wonderful.
Beautiful. I love it.
But, you know, it's just about, tell me about Cicero's and Uncle Tupelo and that stuff.
Oh, Cicero's was, I mean, did you get to, you saw bands at Cicero's, right? In the basement.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, that was our home. We, you know, we played there, you know, as much as we could. You know, it was smaller than a lot of other places, but it was still the best place to play.
It was room and the sweatiest place and the place where you're most likely to banged on the head on the stage as well.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And you didn't care, right?
Yes, exactly.
That was like going home. You know, all of your friends were there. You know, you'd go, you'd hang out early, you'd hang out late after the shows with the people in the bar. I remember we played for our album release. We did our album release there. We did two nights, and then the second night we left and drove straight down to Austin right after the show. But it was just like, you know, it was just the place we wanted to do it, right? I don't know. Is there a place like that in St. Louis now that has that same?
Nothing like, I mean, the Duck Room is fine, but it's not like the original Cicero's. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. That place was special, and I'm sorry that it's not there anymore in the exact form that was then. Even though we know that for so many reasons that couldn't happen, but it was a crazy and special place.
Well, that's true. it wasn't just the people from the general area that were there, but of course the Loop was a special place,
right?
But musicians hung out there all the time, right?
Absolutely.
So it was, you know, the guys from Uncle Tupelo, it was all the bands hung out there all the time, and we were all friends, right? We all wanted each other to do well. We all loved going to see each other. It was never a competitive aspect to the scene in St. Louis. It was a really, you know, magical scene, I think, in that regard. And that's not true in some of the other places we were. Boston was not like that. Boston felt very competitive.
It feels like a totally different scene from what Al told me and everything else. A totally different scene than St.
Louis. Oh, yeah. 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 It was, you know, it was all pay to play up there.
It's kind of funny because both you and Uncle Tupelo end up moving up in that direction during that time.
Yeah.
Just strange.
Yeah. I mean, it makes more sense to be in the Midwest if you're going to tour because you're centrally located, right? But everybody wanted to be on the East Coast. That's, you know, it felt like things were happening. So
definitely. And so anyway, it's so nice to be able to catch up with you and hear about what you're doing. And thank you so much for spending some time with me.
Well, Dale, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me and the rest of the band. It's really been a pleasure. Everybody's had a great time.
And I love all the stuff we're doing. And this musical map is going to be a big deal. And I can't wait to hear more of all the stuff that's going on.
Fantastic. Well, okay. Thank you very much. You take care of yourself.
All right. You too. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
DaleWileyShow.com.